You're listening to The Osiris Munir Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up, my beautiful kindreds? How are you out there today? I hope everybody's well. We've got some cloudy weather here. It's been raining. We love the rain. We just don't like going out in the rain and driving in the rain, but it's nice because people tend to not to be able to drive in Southern Cal because they're so used to being dry and sunshiny. So I want to give a shout out, first of all, to our sponsor. Hey, Kevin, Senior Real Estate and Probate Specialist Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. He will take care of all of your real estate needs. He's a wonderful person. Look him up. 818-571-1508, Coldwell Banker, Kevin Pike. I also want to shout out, local shout out, AfricaChannel.com. Please support them. They have this beautiful content coming directly out of the African diaspora. I want you guys to really support them. They got some beautiful stuff you've never seen before. So please get from behind your egos because America is not the only thing in the world. We like good things. That's the whole point of being an American, is that we can expose and share everyone else's culture as well. Also, shout out. Thanks for calling me last night. I am a Vietnam era vet. And they check on us at the end of the year. Just so you know, there are a lot of veterans that commit suicide. I came out of that. It's in my book. If you want to read about that, Nita, I came out of all of that. I'm one of the veterans that made it safely to the other side. So I shout out to my brothers and sisters at Hollywood Post 43. It's a veterans organization dedicated to us. 2035 Highland Avenue in Hollywood is their address. Really quickly, shout out to Michelle S. of Buzz Media Synergy. They did a big event here where I met the Taste of Honey, the singer Taste of Honey, and I'm wearing her earrings. These are beautiful. It's called musictoyourears.co and a Taste of Honey music.com if you want to check her out. Remember, Taste of Honey, it's all because of you. You went away, one of those. And now, drum roll, be careful how you treat the veterans, you guys. We went into the military to get stipends. That's what we did. So that was our job. And so please, in out there, I want to just really tell you once again, please, veterans have fought a war. We did not go to boot camp. We went to boot camp. This is not a vacation. We were trained to go to battle. And if something should happen over here, they will call us first. So please make sure of how you treat the veterans out there. Those stipends are because we went and served our country, not because it's some extra money that we get a month. Just understand that, okay? All right, now for our guest today, the beautiful, the wonderful, the prolific author and prolific voiceover artist, Cam Clark. Yay. Hey, Cam. Now, Cam, you guys, just so you know, Cam is a member of the original King's Family, which is this famous television show that airs on television. And his mother was a member of the group of the King Sisters.
You've done your homework.
His father was... what's your father's name? Clark. His last name was Clark, but Cameron, not Cameron,
Robert,
but
Clark. Robert Clark.
So he's coming from a truly royal, I don't know what happened to my screen. He's coming from a truly royal family. And I want you guys to acknowledge that. So, hey, Cam, welcome to our show. Hi. So let's get into it. Welcome. First of all, welcome again to the Osiris Munir Show. Thank you for coming out. I know it's raining and taking your sweet, beautiful day and sharing it.
Thanks for having me. My day started before, I just got off one show, but before that, one of my favorite traditions right before Thanksgiving is I go downtown. She and I both are coming to you from LA.
Okay.
I go downtown to the Flower Mart, the Flower District, and load up on my first set of greens and wreaths and garlands and stuff to start the season off fresh, and
really?
Going down there with all the people cutting, and it just smells like a bottle of the greatest pine room freshener. So I started out on a happy day with this cold weather, and I love to be continuing on with you.
Well, thank you for letting us do our lead in before we start talking to you.
Of course.
All about you, baby boy. So first question is that I want to know at what point, and I always wanted to ask somebody this, when you are a member of a group that's famous, everybody, you know, it's a group, it's a family. It's not like you as an individual. And then you break off from that group because you've either outgrown the group, developed more talent, want to extend yourself outside of the group as well as be a part of the group. What led you into becoming your own entity and becoming the prolific author and voiceover artist that we now see?
Well, thank you. People will say, when did you just... What was it to decide to go into show business? And I'm like, well, I had no choice. I was 6 years old, and we were all brought up accidentally on the stage. That I shouldn't say accidentally, but my mom's, the King Sisters, were, for those of you that may not know, were a famous singing group during the big band days and then the Rat Pack days with a jazz infusion thing. And they were invited to do a benefit for a building fund fundraiser. And my Aunt Yvonne said, hey, I have a wacky, kooky idea. Why don't we bring the kids with us and put them on stage, you know, sing a few numbers. And she happened to have it filmed like a crude Super 8, you know, back in the day. And she took it to a friend of hers at ABC. And he said, I'm going to rent you a editing bay in San Francisco. Cut this down to an hour and I'll present it. She did. He presented it to the brass and they went, how soon can we get a pilot on this? So it's all I knew. And when it ended, as careers can, you know, some careers go on till the artist is in the grave. Others have a wonderful ride. When I was an adult, we pretty much, the family itself had stopped performing. The sisters went on, talk about singing to the grave. and I didn't know. My love as a kid, I always thought I was going to grow up and be an illustrator of children's books was my love. But art school is expensive and hard. And after the show was over, my brother got a job working at Warner Brothers in post-production.
Really?
And yeah. And they hire actors. Most people know what Foley is. It's the footsteps and all the inanimate sounds that go into a film after the fact. I mean, after it's shot. There's also a human element, which is all the death rattles. One item 20, we have your suspect on route 9. And paging Dr. Williams. Dr. Williams, please pick up line 201. All that stuff. Football games. Sex grunts. And fist fights. And, you know, zombies. All that stuff is dropped in after the fact. And one thing led to another. And I met a couple on one of these jobs. And they said, have you ever thought about doing this as a career? And I was, you know, I'm 21 years old, like, and they said, we think you should. And this woman, Linda Gary, was her name, huge in animation in the 70s and 80s, took me to a coach, introduced me to an agent, and I never looked back.
Wow.
Kind of a Cinderella thing. I mean, I was trying it all. On camera wasn't interested in me. Modeling wasn't interested in me. Theater, I couldn't land career-wise in any of the other genres, branches, but the voice thing happened and it's the best thing that could have ever happened. I so prefer where I ended up than
now,
something
else. Was the first voice you did the voice of Leonardo in the Teenage
Ninja Turtles?
That
was probably the first big one, but that show we started in 87. 1987. And feels like it sometimes.
Yes.
But I started doing anime at a time when we didn't even have the word anime. It was just dubbing Japanese cartoons. Mm-hmm. And my first big show was a thing called Robotech, which was a dubbing project from Japan. Yeah. And lots of little movies and stuff. But Ninja Turtles was the first big thing. Yeah.
And didn't you do Akita?
Akita.
Yeah, I watched Akita. It was nice, you know.
But it was trippy.
Tripping movie. A little bit. It froze a little bit. We have a little bit of bad weather, you guys, so things might do a little bit of something.
Am I frozen?
You were a little bit, just for a second. It's fine.
Okay. I do the Comic-Con circuit pretty much now. And fans will say, what was it like when you got the role of the Turtles? And we all on the panel go, nothing. It was 5 days of work. It wasn't a thing yet. And as a performer, you learn not to put all your eggs in one basket. Great ideas can crash. Stupid ideas can skyrocket. So you do your job. You do the best you can. You go home and you await for the check and you put in the bank or whatever. So the answer, it didn't exist. So there's no like, oh my God, I got this. We were grateful to be working.
What is it like walking through those doors of respect where you've gone from a D to a C to a B and an A now? They get all the categories. And you finally make it to the big golden doors. And they accept you and you go walking in, you know, with your new label and your new title and your new position in Hollywood. And people are calling, the phones are ringing. What does that feel like?
Well, I wish I had an answer that would line up with that question. But my answer is going to be really boring. I've been working professionally and successfully since I was six. The King family thing was a great ride. And then after a couple of years, I ended up like Cinderella. You know, as soon as I started the voice thing, it was out the gate going. So this sounds so egotistical, but I don't know how else to say it. Yeah, I've always been successful. So there was, and when you're six years old and you're still doing it, it's like, this is what I do. And I'm grateful for it. But it wasn't like I was, you know, working on the farm and at, you know, 18, I head out to California. So that was never part of it. And I think the fact that my career has been in voiceover, Turtles, just for example, was as big as Friends in its category, or Seinfeld, or, you know, whatever show you want to. We wouldn't be, if we had been on camera, we wouldn't have been able to walk down the street. And I think that impacts a lot of successful careers, their face actors, and it changes their lives, you know, much of it for the worse, because they have no privacy and people don't think of that that's the things you give up when you enter this. Sure, there's perks and you love to perform or whatever it is, whether you're a dancer or singer, any of the performing arts. We were behind the mic making a living at something we love to do, but we walk down the street with no problem at all. So there's not that informing what and who we are, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. Well, then let me ask you in reverse. How does it feel to have been born into a provided legacy and being able to take that legacy and not fuck it up, and been able to take that legacy and still hold that legacy to the standard that that legacy was established on. How does that feel?
I love it. Good way to pose that. As a kid, and a lot of children of famous people will say, you know, I met, you know, Bing Crosby would come over to the house, or, you know, whatever it is, that was just our life. And you didn't think anything of it. My mom, this famous singer, would sing me lullabies when she'd tuck me into bed. No. It's just
what happened.
So it was kind of just, it's the only life I knew at home and on stage. And I have friends who were child performers, and the difference is most kids are not on television alone. And that makes a big difference. You got your stage mother off stage if she's groovy or not so cool, and you're alone. As the only child, or maybe you have a Brady Bunch where you have five new friends. But ours was a different, you know, whole different experience. I've totally lost train of thought. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. I want you to lose train of thought. I want you to talk like you're talking to anybody else. You know, and I don't like that feeling of, oh, we're on TV and we're not going to talk about this, and I hate that. I mean, we're talking about being, I'm talking to you like a real human being about what your real life was.
I will take a sidestep on what you said when we were talking about fame and notoriety, that here I am on one of the biggest shows. I'm talking about Turtles. And at one point you're kind of going, well, I'd like for someone to stop me on the street. You know, my ego is like, I'd like to people to know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in line at the movies. This was back in the probably around 1990. And one of those multiplexes. And at the end of one of the lines, there's this little kid, maybe 8 years old. And he's got the turtle t-shirt and a turtle hat and turtle shoes. You know, he's just a walking advertisement for the franchise. And I say to myself, hey, I'm going to give that kid a thrill. I'm going to tell him who I am. So I walk over to this little guy, and he's got this massive ice cream cone. He's like this. And I lean down and I say, hey, it looks like you're a big fan of the Ninja Turtles. And he goes, uh-huh. And I said, well, guess what? I'm Leonardo. Oh, yeah? And I'm Donatello.
Yeah.
I did not make this shit up. And so there I am standing there looking like a pedo, little piece of candy, little boy. And like, okay, security. No, nothing. And I just kind of embarrassingly back away from the kid going, all right, enjoy your movie. One of my favorites.
And I imagine that, you know, I want to feed your ego. Let me feed it a little bit. Because everybody else in front of the camera's egos, their egos get fed all the time. But most of the people in the industry, and I'm coming from the corporate side of the industry, not the, I'm an entertainer. Yeah, I've modeled and all this stuff, but I'm talking about from the corporate business side. Most of the people that make the money in the industry are people that are in production behind the scenes. You never see them. The stars, all of your celebrity people, your working actors and your celebrities, they're only as good as their lifespan lasts. And then they kind of throw you away when you get so old, you really can't work anymore. I want you to understand this. I'm telling you stuff that I know to be true because I've been there, done that, and I'm still in it. And then you have your production people that are going to work until they don't want to work anymore. They don't have to worry about their face getting wrinkled and they got to plump up their skin and still look young when they're not young and all of that, you know, that they're trying to project something that is no longer there. Whereas production people like Cam, people that are actors and people, but they're behind the scenes. They present in a different way without their visual face, without their physical body. Their presentation is coming from inside of the person. Okay. Those people have a lot longer, in my opinion, longevity because they don't have to do all of that. They don't have to try to be somebody they're not still. And when they get 80 and they still want to work, nobody has to see them at 80 years old. They could be limping across the studio. Who cares? You know? And so I want you guys to understand that these people are still celebrities. They're celebrities that you don't get to see. You hear them, feel them, you know, find them, see their names. But they're not out there like, oh, yeah, I'm so-and-so. So, you know, I'm a Denzel White. I'm, you know, a Brad Pitt or somebody like that.
I will add to that, though, and I had no idea that this is how my third act would go. My buddy Rob Paulsen, who played Raphael on the original Turtles with me, he calls me up one day, this is maybe 15 years ago, and said, buddy, there's this thing called Comic-Cons, and you got to get on board. And I'm like, oh, dude, first of all, it's too peoply. I hate people. And who's gonna want our autograph? You know, we're yesterday's news, literally. I always knew, as you can tell from the healthiness of owning I was a success, I always knew I'd be in the book of animation performers. And it would be in there as one of the guys who left a mark. But I had no idea that we had a shelf life. We go to these cons and the people that line up, and we never get a big head about it because we don't get it. I wasn't on Friends. I'm not on whatever big show you want to talk about. Mm-hmm. And to have these people come up and say, you were my childhood. You know, it's just thank you, thank you, thank you. And I'm since the military thing I've just now learned from your intro is a big part of who you are. That's and right. What you represent on your show. Mm-hmm. Townsend Coleman, who is the guy who played the original Michelangelo, the party boy, had a man come up to him and he had a patch of Michelangelo. It kind of like the Velveteen Rabbit. It had seen better days, you know, scrappy. And the man says, I did tours in Afghanistan and Iraq. And each day when I would get up, I'd put this patch on my uniform of Michelangelo. And I would touch him and say, I'm going out. What would Mikey do? And we were all, you know, not only flabbergasted, but in tears that this man said that this patch brought him home. It's hard for me to even talk about it. And he said, and so he has handed it to Townsend. And he goes, oh, that, you know, he's in tears. He's going, thank you for showing me that. And he goes, no, I want you to have it. And Townie goes, I can't have that. And he said, I need you to have it. We can end the show right here.
But it touches you when you realize, like, I was able to make it. A lot of my veteran brothers and sisters didn't make it. I know.
And the fact that we, you know, just the teeny tiny, you know, I'm not making this the, you know, the biggest thing in the world.
No, I understand.
This splinter, it got somebody through in their brain, in their soul.
Right. That's right.
And we wouldn't know any of this if it weren't for the convention circuit and the stories we've heard. And also with the King family, a lot of kids don't come from happy families, as we all know. And as performers, what we can provide, and I've been fortunate enough to provide this for five decades.
Yes,
I love that happy families, you know, would gather together. But the folks who come up and say, I was an only child, or I came from a broken home or foster, every, you know, not, you know, Brady Bunch combination or King family combination. Mm-hmm. And they said, you were my escape. I felt like I had friends. I identified with this one or that one. And we will spend 3 days just saying, thank you. And this, like I said, the stories are innumerable and you can't make this stuff up.
And that's where your ego gets fed, is those people that come to you. You're behind the scenes doing all these things. And I want to show you guys, if Sam can get a close in on that. I printed this up because it's the only way I knew how to do it. These are all the characters that Sam has played. Look at that. Look at that. I don't know if you guys can see it out there, but look at all of those characters. So when you see those characters, that's my sweet, dear, sweet Cam's voice.
And I'll have people come up to the table and they go, I loved you and blah, blah, blah. Or they go, I think I heard your voice on blah, blah. I'm going, I don't remember. I don't remember that show. Can you pull it up on? So they'll pull up an episode. I'll go, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that sounds like me. Yeah, that was me.
Do you ever forget any of the, I mean, you've done so many characters. First, I want to ask you a question about the characters when you have to go into the characters. And I've asked people this before, but I want to just hear your interpretation of what process happens to you. Do you forget who you are? You then let the entity take over you. You become the complete character. Do you study a part of the character and then leave a little bit of yourself in there so you can command and control the voice that you're trying to emit? Or how does that process work for you? If you can explain the process, that is.
One of my favorite Christmas presents when I was probably 10, and a lot of kids I know got this, and it's kind of not random, but like, really? My favorite present was getting a little reel-to-reel tape recorder. Mm. And then after that passed, you'd get a cassette and you could record your own stuff. For me, if we were doing theater or movies, I might have that an ability to answer your question differently. Doing silly voices or doing important voices, if the video game is really intense, it's kind of like I'm doing a puppet show. I'm doing voices on my cassette. I would walk around interviewing everybody in my neighborhood, have my mom sing on my radio show.
Yeah.
And my alter ego for this radio show, his name was Leroy Jackson.
No.
And I patterned him after Lincoln Hayes from Mod Squad.
From Mod Squad.
Because he was hands down the grooviest, coolest dude on the planet. And so I tried to channel him as the host and be kind of sexy and nasty and fuck you like he would be. Yeah. And I can remember like walking up to my mom and doing my best Lincoln Hayes.
He was so cool though. Wasn't he cool?
He was the best. I'd interview her as him. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this kid needs medication.
You know? No, he needs an outlet. That's what he needs. He needed an outlet.
I got it.
And you got the outlet. That is so wonderful.
So that's not really a process for us. You get a visual at your audition. This is a Martian. It's an elephant. It's a telephone. It's a whirring mixer. And you look at it and you go, okay, he's built like this. Or the producers will say he's kind of shy or he's evil or he's whatever emotion. And you build it from there. But I think the people that are successful in what I do, it just kind of falls out. And there's not so much the preparing, that you might for, you know, doing your Shakespeare or, you know, Death of a Salesman or, you know, whatever. So the process is a lot simpler. And I think perhaps that comes across with children's television. However, again, there have been times when I've been brought to tears when I'm doing a video game, say it's about an apocalypse. And I had one where my kid brother, you know, and I'm only like, I'm doing this voice like I'm 22 years old. Yeah. And my little brother has been bitten. And he will be turning soon. And the cops or whoever is the anti-zombie, you know, squad, I'm like going, please don't shoot. No, he's just my brother. No, he wasn't bit. He just got scratched. You know, that kind of thing. And I'd be emotionally a wreck. So, but for me, it's not so much prep as living in the moment and getting the sides and choosing right now what's going to come out as opposed to let's do some prep. And I'm not putting down prep by any means.
No, just not at all.
My process is rather simple and organic-y.
It just comes out.
It does. It does.
So you don't really have to. It's not like a singer where you have to go, oh, yeah, I'm going to sing 10 songs tonight and it's going to be a 90-minute set. Or, you know, like an actor where you have to be on the set at 5 in the morning because we're filming the part where they fall off the cliff and it's got to look like it's dark. And
maybe, you know, some of this was born out of necessity. We kids in the King family said we were raised by wolves. The parents were, you know, doing their thing, being stars and blah, blah, blah. And I, on our first series, we had a huge team with ADs, assistant directors, all of that, that would take care of the little monkeys, teach them their lines and all that stuff. When we got a little older and you aren't as cute, you know, you're just standing around isn't cute because now you're 10 or whatever.
You're adorable.
Not as just good-a-goot. And I can remember we're doing our Christmas special and I'm backstage in the dressing rooms and my dad comes up to me. He goes, oh, by the way, here's your sides. You're introducing mom when you're with your brother's number. I'm like, I'm 10. You couldn't have taught these to me 2 days ago to work on them. And I cringed when I watched the special because you could see I'm going, hi, I'm Cam. And this is my brother, Alice. I mean, my mother, Alice. And, you know, so flying by the seat of your pants was often a regular thing.
I bet you were just the cutest, most
brat
innocent, little
ever
kid.
Was.
You were a brat. Were you bratty or were you a kid that would do what the parents told them to do?
I'm told I was pretty bratty. As a little kid.
So you were an independent individual, even at that stage.
You hear a lot of stories from child actors about the, not abuse, like not that kind of abuse, but their parents used their money or that stuff.
Yes.
My pop, each week when the paycheck came, I'm 7. I would have to go to the bank with him. He would hand me my little passbook. And for those of you who are old enough, these little bitty books, and they'd stamp when you put your turn. And he'd go, give your little book to the nice lady. So I'd go like this, and she'd stamp it, and she'd hand it back to me. So I was taught finances, and nobody used my money. But as far as being a brat, the point of that long explanation, I remember I wanted a slide for our swimming pool. All the kids had slides and it was just so cool. I want a slide. He goes, well, we're not going to do that. Well, but I want one, you know, that whole whiny thing. He goes, you want it so bad, you pay for it. And I went, fine, I will.
Uh-oh.
And that was the end of the argument. It goes, okay, we're going over to the pool place. I got your checkbook. So I was a little adult. A little bitty adult, and don't have the PTSD that some children.
Children have. Could develop.
My dad took great care of me as a little adult. I'm not saying I missed childhood by any means, but he was really good that way. But yeah, my other cousins tease me about my dad would give me whatever I wanted. I had that thing done to me. I wanted it. He'd get it. Sometimes he'd say, but you're paying for it.
There you go.
But I grew out of it.
I like that.
And I'm the cute, adorable grown-up with no ego problems at all that you see before you now.
And I love what you're wearing, by the way. I was going to say, I like that green. I like the green with the green vest.
Isn't that groovy? Banana Republic, people.
This I love that.
Banana Republic. It's on short. Yeah, I do voiceovers for a living. It's on sale now.
Yeah, I like that, though. I like the green you got going today.
Before we
go on, I got to take another break to say hey to our sponsor, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. He is a senior real estate and probate specialist, people. He knows his stuff. When I tell you, the man knows what he's talking about, he knows what he's talking about. So don't forget to call him, 818-571-1508. You can tell him that Osiris said so. And let's back to Cam. Cam, which one of those characters, out of all the characters you did, and we're talking about your dad, did your parents ever instill, like, did they have anything that they wanted you to do that you, as a spinoff, or were all of the characters you played, were those things of your choice, or what came to you? How did that happen?
Again, they were pretty hands-off, and yet I apparently had a knack. I would never consider myself an impersonator, you know, Rich Little kind of thing.
Yeah,
did have an ear apparently. And at 7 years old, we did a Halloween episode, and it opened with me standing in profile, like if you remember the Alfred Hitchcock show.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And, you know, the music, ba-dum, ba-da-da-da-dum, ba-dum.
Yes.
And he would stand there with his profile drawn on the thing behind him. And then he'd turn to camera and say, good evening. So they drew a profile of me, you know, this tall. And I turned to camera and go, good evening. Welcome to the King Family Show, you know, kind of thing. And I would do Jimmy Durante on the show, you know, ha cha cha.
With that nose.
And they knew somehow that was in me. I don't know how. And that's another thing about a real family. If this were a phony family, you'd audition and they would choose actors, whatever their ages, to be in this pretend show. You bring a real life family and plop them up on stage. Nobody knows who can do what. And some of us had more, whatever, talent or ability for a performance thing than others. So it was kind of this weird kind of rise. You know, someone's going to excel at something. But it wasn't because of casting. So that could be a little tricky when you're all related. Well, why can't my son have a solo there? You know, that kind of family, you know, thing.
You're the only child, is that correct?
Of
the King's family. You were the only
girl. Child. There was 36 of us on that show.
Okay, so how many of were you the middle kid, the youngest kid?
We had a big set of teenagers.
Yeah.
And then there were seven littles when we started. And I was like the head of the little kids as the oldest one.
Okay.
From seven down to two when we started, all on stage, all hitting our marks and learning our lyrics and everything.
I got to go back and watch the show because I haven't seen it in a long time. And I'm going to go but watch it now that I've seen you and met you in person.
That we're at the holiday season, we, just like Andy Williams or whoever, we're kind of synonymous with the holidays.
Holiday season.
And the name of my book is Now They're All Here. 100 years of entertainment from America's first family of song, the King family. Now, shameful plug here. This is the book.
No, I wanted you to plug it. That's why I waited for you to say about your book. And that's why I announced you as an author so we could talk about that book. Now, why now? Why write the book now? What did something inspire you to write it now? Is it timely now?
It's a horrible thing that inspired me.
What?
I got my feathers rustled. Is that how you say that? No.
I like it. You got your feathers rustled. That sounds right. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Ruffled.
There was a coffee table book on Bob Mackie. Beautiful book. And we were the costume designer. We were his first show. Now, we had no budget like Cher or Diana Ross or Carol Burnett, whatever. And he had to dress a bunch of regular people, tons of them. But in this book, we have a page, and I've got no problem that we had a page in this beautiful book. He had so many huge stars, blah, 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 no ego. But the author in it, and I guess, you know, maybe people thought it was funny, but I did not, and nor was it true. He said after their first season, they all ended up on the unemployment line. Mm-hmm. And that just kind of bugged me. And I kind of was like, well, I'll show you. And what started out as me just doing a lovely Shutterfly kind of book for my family grew into something that got published. Mm-hmm. And Now They're All Here is the only line my grandma ever had on our show. And it's our Thanksgiving special, 1967. And we all singing Over the River and Through the Woods as we march into her, the house representing her home, big, you know, Victorian stage thing. And the last little kid runs up. He's been late. He pecks her on the cheek. And she says, now they're all here.
Oh, that's where the title.
Just like, you know, we all say things from movies like, mm-hmm. I'll have what she's having, or we're not in Kansas anymore. It is a thing that my family to this day says when we get together. We all live everywhere now. When the last one arrives, now they're all here. And to me, that is not the catchiest of titles, but it is what
it's accurate. It's accurate.
It is
now accurate. They're all here. Now they're all here. Now, how you said everybody's all over the place. Let's talk about that a little bit. I know, you know, all these people, part of your family, then as we're growing up, we're changing, we're developing. I do start doing this. One becomes a this, one becomes a that. How many of you actually are still in the industry and still doing what you love? You're the only one?
Yeah.
Where's everyone else? What are they doing now?
Butcher, baker, candlestick maker. pretty much all over. I mean, the family stopped making money and people got straight jobs. They married and moved away, you know. Mm-hmm. By choice, I think there were others who would have liked to, but it did not happen. You know, no one knows why things are
like they are.
What they are. In our 1967 Christmas special, mm-hmm. and this is probably the greatest thing that on any of our shows, my mom, who could not lip sync, because she could never sing a song the same way twice.
Oh, wow.
She would sing live. And her song in the show was I'll Be Home for Christmas. My oldest brother, Lex, was at the piano. Amazing piano player. My brother, Rick, was in basic training and in the Army. And they planned to, the producers, which were family, my Aunt Yvonne and her husband Bill, planned this surprise. They snuck, they got special permission to get Ricky out of basic training. They got him like a 2-day or whatever it is pass to come home. And she's singing, "I'll be home for Christmas. You can count on me." And my oldest brother had faked a voiceover as Ricky going, "Dear Mom, sure wish I could be home." You know, there's a picture of Rick on the piano. "Sure wish I could be home with you." And she's standing there listening to this VO. Uh-huh. And Ricky in his uniform walks on. "You only have one take to get this, to get a surprise." Mm-hmm. It is the most brilliant, heartfelt thing. It was so real. Her surprise, she's screaming and crying. He's crying. But she doesn't miss a beat of the song. It was so awesome. "Oh my God, it can't be done." Da, da, da. And she's hugging him. And at the end of the song, where there's a tag, she goes, "If only in my dreams, if only in my dreams." The background singers, and at that she goes to hug Ricky. The background singers go, "My dreams." She's here like this, and she goes, "My dreams." She's hugging and bawling her eyes out. But there she, but the show must go on, and I'm not going to miss more of it.
You know, and I always wanted to ask someone too, because we, unfortunately, we're running out of time.
I know it.
Doggone it. But I wanted to ask you, you know, when people are get really emotional on camera and you know you're going to cry, but you got to say your speech. You go, "I know I'm going to cry, but I got to, how do you keep from crying? How do you keep yourself from totally becoming an emotional wreck in front of a worldwide public and still carrying on your function of a star, of what you're doing as your talent? How do you keep your own personal emotion out of it is what I want to say.
People's favorite thing on the long run of Carol Burnett was when she, Harvey Korman, and Tim Conway could not keep it together. They were giggling so hard. And the scene, and they left it in. You know, if you remember, they'd be going and they would stop talking because they can't say the next line without
laughing.
People love that. People love if you mess up on stage. I don't mean you're drunk and you're whatever. Really? No. It means you're letting them in.
You're human. Now,
if you're tearing up on something, you're not going to let it go. And this is not to say it's phony, but you are feeling this. You're going to hold it. You're going to hold, not back. You're going to hold it at bay. And you're going to sing through it. You're going to hold it back as a performer and a human. Both things are working at the same time. And you will hold it in. Your voice might inform your performance, and people love that. You're not going to get maudlin and, you know, let it go. But if you can hold on to it, yeah, nothing is, people love when your eyes glisten and they get wet. And it's not a phony thing, but I've always found it helps to, I don't get upset by it. If it happens, I employ it. But not in a phony way. I just, I've been doing this for 50 years.
You look like you're about 25, 30 years old.
But well, anyway, you must have a star filter, a Vaseline screen.
No, I have real eyes that look into your soul. And I'm looking beyond your glasses and your lips and your teeth, those beautiful teeth. I'm looking at the entity that calls itself Cam. That's what I see, and that's a person that's about 25, 30 years old.
Well, so on that note, amazing host.
Sorry, baby.
Can I do the shameful plug before we close?
Yes, of course.
This is obviously a coffee table book. You can get this on Amazon or at my publisher, which is rarebirdlit.com, just as it sounds.
Rare Bird
Lit. As in literature. R-A-R-E, Bird, B-I-R-D, Lit, L-I-T, as in literature, .com. Thank you so much for having me on and let me talk about this book that I'm really proud of.
I wanted you to talk. I'm really, you know, I wanted people to know the name of the book, you guys, is Now They're All Here. Just so you know, it's the book on his life, the King's family, their lives.
100 years.
You know, 100 years. I mean, it's just amazing, especially those of you that like history and you want to know where, if you want to know where you're going, you got to know where you came from, people.
It's mainly photographs. It's mainly photographs. So it's beautiful, 100-year of pictures. And yes, knowing who you are, knowing where you come from with all the bumps and the wrinkles and the skin knees, it all informs who you are.
Okay.
And
there we're going. So we need your social media tags. Where can we find out more about you and that wonderful book, Now They Are All Here?
Okay, you can also find out about it on my website, camclarkvoices.com, and then Amazon and at the publishers. And I also post old clips from the show and stuff.
Okay.
And it's kind of festive, especially now with the holidays coming.
Okay, so I'm going to find your book and your social media. You're on IG and TikTok under...
IG. I'm too old and cranky to go on TikTok.
You're on IG and it's under...
At Cam Clark.
Voice okay, at Cam Clark. And that's C-L-A-R-K-E, right?
Yes, don't forget that E. We paid a lot of money for that extra letter.
Because it's easy to get twisted if it's a Clark and it's the wrong Clark. You know, it's the Clark K without the E. So, and don't forget about me, Osiris underscore Munir underscore the painter on IG. I cannot do this without your likes, your subscribes. Talk to me. I'm a real person. I'm not the fake Hollywood people. I get into some real conversation about real life we're talking here, not who you think people should be, but what's really going on in the lives of people that we see every day on a screen. They have real lives. They're real people just like you and I. Okay, so we want to talk about that. Don't forget that I love you. I like you for who you are, what you stand for, to show up every day in your nice human suit, call your skin. And I love you for being courageous and brave and continue to fight the endless battle of overcoming self, actually. And let's give a shout out to Sam Hassan, LA Talk Radio. I love him. Without him, we would not be able to shine. I would not be here. And shout out to him. And then thank our guest again, once again, Cam Clark, the wonderful, beautiful soul I have met today. I'm marketing on my heart, Cam. You're there. And so don't forget to support him and all of his works. Okay. We'll see you soon. Come back.
All right.
Don't forget, buy his book, support.
Buy my book.
Read, people. Read so you can know something about life. Read the man's story. So if you ever have a group of kids and you want to call them a family, you might have some insight. We'll talk to you soon. Don't forget, we'll be back next week with a guest. I love you much, y'all. Mwah. Bye.
You're listening to The Osiris Munir Show, only on LA Talk Radio.